Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today we have a pretty fun interview. I'm excited to get into the details. And the premise here is we failed at early retirement the first time, but we're trying it again, and here's what went wrong. And I have Bill and Natalie in the studio today. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Very good.
I'm doing awesome, and I think we're going to be able to dig into some details today where, you know, maybe people don't hear these stories. We hear the early retirement stories, like everything worked out great, just as planned. But you guys have a few very interesting pieces here. And we're going to talk about a leave of absence, like taking a vacation, thinking, hey, we actually have enough money to retire. And we're going to stop working, but then you're both currently working these days, right?
Correct.
It's so sad to hear that, but you're moving in the right direction. And in some of the preparation for this episode, you sent over a lot of notes, and I want to read a quote from the email. "While returning back to work sucks now, it has confirmed that we are ready to be done, both financially and mentally. Had we not returned to work, I think we always would have wondered." And having that confirmation and testing, I think, is super valuable. So you'll be able to move forward and feel really comfortable with your decision. So I want to start with kind of an exciting part of the story here. So around 2025, you guys have a 3-month epic European trip planned. You needed time off from work. So Natalie, how did you approach this with your employer?
Yeah, so in 2024, we started planning this trip with the plan of asking for a sabbatical, but we kind of decided we were going to go one way or the other, if we got the sabbaticals or not. So we planned the entire trip. Most of it was paid for. Most of it was non-refundable. I had worked at my company for 12 years. I had 10 years vacation accrued, and I was asking for 12 weeks. My company has a written leave of absence policy, separate from maternity leave and FMLA and military and all the other leaves. It's a personal leave policy. So I read up on it. I filled out the form. I met with my boss and told him that I wanted the time off. He was, I think, like personally excited and interested and supportive. And he'd let me know. And about a week later, he called me in his office and told me that HR denied my request. And so I said, well, July 11th is my last day.
Wow. And you were ready since you had the date in mind. So you kind of knew that it wasn't going to be approved. And you were like, I'm ready to get out of here.
Basically, like I said, the trip was already planned. It was already paid for. We already rented our house out. Everything was done. Leading up to that, the last year in 2024, I was pretty miserable at work anyway. So I kind of felt, I don't know, everything happens for a reason. If I get it, if I don't get it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm very bitter that I did not get it because there was an actual formal policy. The way it was delivered to me was, if we let Natalie take a leave of absence, then we have to let everybody take a leave of absence or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
But I work for a very large company, corporate America, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Okay. And then Bill, what about your side? How did your employer deal with
this? So mine was definitely different than that. I do not work for a large corporation. I'm much more smaller. So she went to her boss. I went to the owner of the company. I started top down. Mm-hmm. I was definitely nervous about it, but I had a couple plans. I did some research. I did some almost like an interview. I was getting prepped for it.
Yeah.
Have you ever read the books, Never Split the Difference?
I haven't. I've heard of it though.
By Chris Voss. Chris Voss was a former FBI negotiator, and he wrote this book that it incorporates all the strategies they use for negotiating with hostages, but into everyday life, like negotiating a salary. Or he actually even puts it as simple as like negotiating your kids to go to bed on time, you know, stuff like that. That's just on the whole tagline for it. And it's true. There's a lot of really cool stuff in there. I used one of the aspects, which is kind of contrary to a lot of things. He wants you to get your opponent, whoever you're negotiating with, to say no, because it actually opens them up, that it incorporates some empathy, and actually it makes them less feel like they're trapped, so they're on your side. For example, if I were to say in this scenario, like, you work for me, Doug, we have some bigwigs coming in tomorrow. Can you have this podcast up and running and posted by tomorrow morning?
No, I don't think so.
But yep. But you need your job, so you have to say yes.
Okay.
So yes. This is like a, it's one of those
questions. Yes. This is me for
right,
real.
Right, 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 okay. Right. And you work for me in some sort of a non-fi sort of thing. So you have to.
Okay.
So you have to say yes, but you were kind of like, yes, I had dinner plans with, you know, Cindy and Steve tonight, but now I guess I'll have to cancel that.
Yeah.
And so you're pissed off, but you have to do it. And he said, yes. Had I phrased it differently, like, Doug, the bigwigs are coming in tomorrow, would it be impossible for you to have this up and running tomorrow? You might say, no, it wouldn't be impossible. I would just have to cancel dinner plans with Cindy and Steve, and
yeah,
and you'll get it done. So you're now part of the solution.
Yeah.
So I walked into his office and I said, hi, is this a bad time? He said, no. I had a big smile in the back of my head. I went in, I closed the door, and I said, I'm taking some time off. He said, how much? I said, 3 months. He said, okay, so you're asking for a sabbatical. I said, yes. And then while we sat there, he went through just the math of it all and realized that, well, it would take so long to find a replacement for you, to train a replacement for you, so we might as well just make some sort of a substitute while you're there or while you're gone. And if you want to come back, we'll make that work. And that's what we did. But while we sat there, we came up with the whole plan. My company, like I said, is not large. It did not have a leave of absence policy. So he and I essentially verbally wrote one while we sat there. And it was done. Plus, we gave enough notice. That was like 2 months in advance before July. So
gotcha.
It was respectful.
Interesting. And then, let's see. So you took the time off. Where'd you go? Tell us about trip a little bit.
We went all through Europe. I'll just give you the quick,
like, we did fast travel.
We do fast travel. It's like an ampersand is how we kind of called it. We started in Spain, kind of went up to the Pyrenees, a little bit of south central France, Geneva in Switzerland. Then we went up to Poland, a couple places, over to Scotland. Let's see how this is kind of like, yeah. Where the hell are you guys going? From Scotland, we went to England down to Greece, Greece over to Italy, all the way around the outskirts of Italy to the north. And then we went over to Istanbul, where there's a direct flight back to Denver.
Okay. Wow. And had you done a trip of that scope ever before?
No.
I did with friends more in a backpacking sort of way.
Okay.
In 2001.
Okay. So. Anything before we got together, like, doesn't count. And like, we've never.
Don't even know why I brought it up.
We is us, not you and your friends.
No. No, we have not.
That's good. Okay. So, and just to be clear, by that point in time, you guys had already hit your FI number and you would have been comfortable not working anymore. Is that correct?
Yes. We hit our FI number the year before. And kind of just didn't quit at that point because we had this trip already started. And it was like, well, we have nothing else going on between now and then. We might as well just keep working. And then.
And we like paying for the trip in advance.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Get the sunk cost. So like, exactly. There's a way to, or you feel really bad if you cancel it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So you were like, we've hit our fine number. We could stop, but we don't have anything planned. And you guys couldn't think of anything better to do than go to work.
Well, sadly, I think, actually, a lot of our story was just working and saving and working and saving and neglecting that part of our lives. So we, like, the one question that still gives me like PTSD is when people ask, what do you do for fun? Like, I hated at getting asked that question during
we had terrible answers to that. I mean,
we're like, what's fun?
We thought we were having fun, and we do things. We're not boring, but it just, when we had to explain to people what we do, we're like, well, we like to go out to eat and drink and we like to travel, but that really, it's not a lot of time. And then Yeah. And there's house projects. We always say house projects, but that's kind of also a bullshit answer because everybody has house projects. But So anyway,
And obviously I asked that question, or maybe it was a statement. You guys couldn't think of anything.
Yeah.
But you're working on it now. We're going to talk about some of those things. Yes. But I do want to rewind and talk about like the FI journey. So you mentioned like you guys worked a lot over the years. So when did you discover FI and who was it?
It was me. I read an article about Mr. Money Mustache in 2012-ish. Surprise, surprise. Then I went to the blog and kind of went down that rabbit hole. At the time, the article that spoke the most to me or that had the most impact was the one about your debt being an emergency. And like, I thought the retiring early was really cool that some guy did this in his 30s, but it was more that article just talking, it made me rethink the way I thought about our debt. And it wasn't credit card debt, it was mostly student loans, but it was weird because I thought the takeaway that I had from that article was, why am I okay having $50,000 in student loan debt? Where if I had $50,000 in credit card debt, I'd be freaking out. And then the natural, obvious way at the time for me of like, how do we pay off student loans is to be frugal and cut costs here and there and save money in order to pay it off as soon as possible. So that was kind of my focus at that point, and motivation was just to cut things in order to pay off our debt.
Right. And Natalie, so you discovered it. Bill, were you on board? Were you like, what are you talking about?
She originally came to me and said, hey, I have an idea of, you know, how to pay off debt or whatever and how to go down this path. I didn't know what this path was yet. She decided to lead with making our own laundry detergent, which we were on a walk. She brings this up and I'm like, what the? And then she's like, yeah, it's easy. You just cook it in pots. And I'm like, fuck that. You're not using my pots. No. And also, it's going to be me that ends up doing it to save, what, 87 cents or something? Yeah, so, yeah, I was initially very, no. I'm not giving up whatever we want to give up. But then she rephrased and kind of talked more about this paying down debt and without any real sacrifice to our lifestyle.
Sure.
And it made more sense. And couple of days went by, a couple more walks, it worked out. We do not make our own detergent, just for the record.
That's pretty good. We never went down that route, but I think like you could do the same with toothpaste probably too, right?
Thanks for that. Appreciate the...
This is your new project when we get home.
Yeah. Just like baking soda and like spearmint or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So it sounded like... Well, there was a wide range of blogs and people putting out information then, or maybe it was a small range and it was more on the frugal side. So it sounds like you guys are not specifically frugal and you, well, I'll leave it open. Yeah. Are you frugal? How'd you guys grow up? Any details around that?
I would say we are inherently somewhat frugal. Would you agree? Okay. She has her own thing.
Yeah.
we do a lot of house projects that we do. I do most of the work. So in that regard, I don't like paying people to do stuff that I can do.
Yeah.
But other things were lavish on it. So it's like this kind of...
I don't think we're frugal. I think at the beginning, we just didn't really have any money in the first place. So we did everything that we wanted to do at that low level of income maybe. And then when our income started increasing, we just didn't change anything. So it's like we didn't really sacrifice. I guess we sacrificed lifestyle inflation, but we just did everything we wanted to do. I think everybody's like this. Everybody spends money on something that other people think is wasteful.
Right.
And then people don't understand. Like, I used to get Starbucks every single day. And my coworkers would comment on that, but then they had their brand new Range Rover. So I'm like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
I think we joke that our neighbors think we're homeless because I feel like we wear the same clothes a lot, or they see me in the same thing on the front porch every single day.
Yeah.
So there's certain things I think we're frugal about, but then there's other stuff. Like lately we're super bougie on hotels, and that's where we splurge, and we like to go out to like Michelin restaurants and stuff like that. Yeah. So, but then I'm also wearing flip-flops that I've had for 20 years. So it's kind of like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is super similar with us too. Like we... didn't have like super expensive taste, but then whatever we thought was like pretty nice in our late 20s or whatever actually wasn't that nice. It was just nicer than what we had before. So it was the contrast that made a difference. But yeah, as we earned more money, especially like with housing or cars, like the big ticket items, we kept it pretty even. And then whatever, after the 15 years or something like that, it really added up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And any other things that you guys spend a lot on? So food and lodging, like, which is almost, I mean, there's the sky's the limit on that. You could go as high as you want almost.
True.
Yeah, and what else?
A lot of our lodging is actually points, but that's another story altogether.
Okay. It's probably mostly
I'd say that's the, like, that is the
travel and food. Yeah.
We are definitely more on the I'm not going to get the cheap stuff. If we're going to do something, whatever that something is, we do usually do the, you know, higher quality, which usually costs more. I don't think we flinch on that anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And it is interesting because it sounds like our timelines are around the same, where like now, like we maybe oversaved a little bit and we don't have super expensive taste on most stuff. And like we just have one car now. So that's just a good example. Like we could have gotten a new car and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But as you've caught up now and you're like, okay, I can spend a little bit more. So is that a conscious effort, or you're just like, it fits in our budget? And I mean, you guys went back to work and didn't have to, and you've worked for an extra year. So obviously like there's a lot more money flowing cash flow wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually that's the one, when we decided to go back to work after our trip, we agreed that we weren't going to save anything. So we really haven't been saving anything. I think we're getting company matches on our 401ks, that's it. But we're pretty much blowing everything, which is kind of fun. Sometimes we're like, is this going to be a problem when like the income stops? But I think, not that we sacrifice too much along the way, but there's maybe some neglect that we upgraded a couple things, but I feel like we're good for another 20 years.
Yeah, we didn't necessarily notice it at the time, but like looking back, it's like, oh yeah, we could have incorporated this in our life as well.
Yeah.
That,
give an example.
The only examples I can really think of are the hobbies that we've started doing. So,
okay.
That's like pennies.
I know. It's not
We got a new car.
Oh yeah.
We got a dining room table. I'm embarrassed how much that cost. We redid our deck. We got a new stereo. So our stereo was like making this crackling sound. And so we got a new one. And when you took it down and put the new one up, he thinks a wire might have just been loose. But anyway, we got a new stereo system. And then we've come to find our TV isn't compatible with the stereo system. So then we got a new TV.
Yeah, that was funny.
And then now we need a new couch. No, I'm joking. It's like one thing after the other. But
it wasn't an issue, even though we did need a new TV. It was like, damn it.
Yeah.
Sorry, we need a new TV. Yeah. One more thing.
But because of the income, and it's probably super wasteful, and in hindsight, we probably shouldn't have done these things, but I don't know. It's like the money's already gone. I already figured out about it.
Well, and it's part of like testing to see like, oh, if I upgrade this thing, like, did it make a big difference or not? Yeah. And then hopefully you'll be able to apply that to other stuff too. So, so check the wires before you buy it. Yeah.
It wasn't a wire.
That's how I remember the story.
So you paid off debt early. How many years to pay off the student loans and whatever?
It was probably 5 years of our journey, but after the student loans, because we didn't really know anything about saving and investing at that point, we just immediately went to the mortgage, right or wrong. I don't know, there's an argument and a debate about that, but so it took us 5 years to do the student loans and the mortgage. So we've been mortgage free since 2017.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's huge. And quick note, what are your careers or jobs? Just so we have a reference point.
I also hate this question. I always like pivot to his job. I do software support for an accounting department.
And I'm in wine sales. So I work for a wine distributor.
Got it. And then education-wise, what degrees or not degrees do you have? Or
I have an accounting degree and an advanced accounting degree, MBA. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm a career changer, so I was civil engineering. And then I went to culinary school after all that.
Oh, cool.
Stayed in the restaurant world and then went to the wine world. So
Gotcha.
Kind of an interesting progression. But,
all right. So that's cool. Yeah. Do you cook a lot now these days?
Periodically, not as much as I should. I mean, we have these pots and pans.
Yeah, these pristine pots and pans.
Yeah, you can make soap or detergent. All right, so you paid off your home, and I have some notes here. Your savings rate was like 65% for at least a handful of years.
Yep.
Yeah, what was it like? Did it feel like you were depriving yourselves from anything, saving that much? Yeah, talk about that time frame.
I don't feel like we deprived. I mean, we still did pretty much everything we wanted to do. So we wanted to eat and whatnot, and that's kind of my job too. So it was kind of I'm satisfying making connections for work, and we're having fun. My job's more of a lifestyle than it is an occupation. So.
Yeah, I really don't feel like we also, I mean, maybe we're a bunch of weird money nerds in this group, but it's very motivating to see your savings go up, or your balances go up, or you have a goal to save this much over the year, or I don't know. I feel like all of that along the way was very, very motivating.
Yeah, I think the only thing sacrificial, I guess, was just finding cheaper ways to do whatever we were wanting to do, if there was a cheaper way to do whatever it was. I don't even really have an example of that. I guess I'm just thinking,
yeah,
minimizing costs here and there. Like, I guess at one point in time, we decided, you know, somewhere in the 2015 plus or minus years, there was a, like, instead of going out to the high end restaurants, we started, like, we're having a lot of fun on just the ones that are half the price, and it's just as much fun. So we kind of did that for a while.
Yeah.
But that was almost more because we were burnt out, because all the expensive ones are pretty much the same once you, you know, frequent them.
Yeah.
So you need to pump the brakes a little bit. So that's about it. Sorry if that was lackluster answer.
No, that totally, I mean, that makes sense. And I see a lot of stories. I usually don't read them. I just read the headlines. but it's something like people think FIRE is really dumb because it's so, I mean, they set up a straw man argument of like deprivation and making your own laundry detergent or eating really, really like cheap, like rice and beans, like the cheapest food that you can get, ignoring like the health, you know, issues with that approach. Although if people are into that, that's fine. I don't care too much, but I think there's a wide range, and like, you know, as you guys progress through your career, you earned more money and you're like, oh, we're just saving what we're not spending and you're kind of keeping the expenses. I mean, it obviously crept up a little bit over the years with inflation and whatever, but like largely it stayed in a, on the lower level based on the money that you were earning.
What it could have been.
Yeah. Yes.
And as with many people, she has spreadsheets that are immaculate. But there were, 3 years in a row we spent within $50 of each other, if not less of a margin?
Yeah, that's kind of a game too. I was like, can you do this in January
so we can... True, really. Just to maintain that. But still, even if that happened, it was just insane how consistent we were for a while there.
The accounting degree, right? Elizabeth is going to enjoy chatting with you. Yeah, she would. I'm like, do we have to track all this? Is this really necessary? All right. So, Natalie, and I think it was mainly around your work, because the wine sales lifestyle sounds like it's probably not that horrible.
Yeah,
so, like,
I don't get a lot of sympathy.
Yeah. It's not too bad. You're hanging out with your friends drinking wine.
Yeah.
So, Natalie, talk about like burnout and just like working hard. And, you know, we had COVID in there, and jobs can be demanding depending on what's going on. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So the job that I'm in now, I'm in software support. So I feel like I'm always on call. A lot of it, I'm doing it to myself. I think that the company doesn't really expect it. I feel like I had something to prove maybe early on, especially, but then it was really hard to let that go. COVID especially was challenging for me, as it was for probably a lot of people. But when we originally went home during COVID, I don't think anybody knew how long it would be. So I set up my monitors in the dining room. Like, had I known it would have been a year, I would have put it in like a dedicated office. But so it was in the dining room, and I guess I'm a hard worker, because it's really hard to shut it off. If every time you walk in the room, the computer's there, it's so easy to just log in and check an email. It's so hard to log off. We were also, my company was in the middle of an acquisition at that point, so it was a huge project that I was working on, and I just worked nonstop the entire time. I would get up and start working, and then magically there'd be a coffee. And then I would work all day, and then magically 14 hours later, there would be a margarita. So that's where,
compliments at me.
That's where he came in. But I think that was the kickoff of my burnout, or the, I guess if that's how you would say it. And from then it just got worse and worse and worse over the years. But 2020 specifically, again, because I couldn't shut it off, we're living in my office. And at that point, we were also sleeping in the living room. So my office was my bedroom, was my living room, was my dining room.
Yeah, our eldest dog at the time, he was not able to go up the stairs anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was starting in somewhere in 2019, which he couldn't go up the stairs. So I tried carrying him a couple of times, but he was 40 pounds of put me the fuck down.
Oh,
I realized it was dangerous. Like I couldn't do this because we were both going down the stairs. So we actually got our mattress and moved it into the living room. Our living room's open into the dining room. It's an open floor plan.
Yep.
So there we are sleeping in the living room, 30 feet from her office.
Yeah.
So yeah, she would wake up at like, I don't know, before dark or before dawn and get an idea. And then she would just get up and go over there and work. And we were still sleeping. But you know those keyboards that are really like they're rubber and soft and quiet? Yeah, she doesn't have one of those. It was clickety-clickety-clickety-click.
But we slept downstairs for 2 years.
Yeah. With, 2 years? Uh-huh. Yeah. For the pup.
Yeah. 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 And I think that made him live two years longer. So. Yeah.
Because he was, plus 2020, we were with him all the time.
Yeah.
So
2020 was a horrible year, and it was the best year.
Yeah. I didn't have much to do because I couldn't really go to places.
Right.
It was very relaxed. So I did a lot of landscaping.
Okay.
And coffee and margarita making.
Yeah, yeah. And then you continued with the burnout, Natalie, basically like starting in 2020 and then for the next few years until you stopped working?
I don't know if I just couldn't let it go after that or it just continued. Just the burnout moved into the office when we came back to work and it just...
You're also bitter about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved working from home, so I hated having to go back in the office.
Yeah.
Especially in a software support role. It seems pretty obvious that I could do that remotely. Yeah. But yeah, I just worked all the time. That was my identity, I don't think it is anymore.
No, you're much better now. But she used to be if a question popped up at 6:30 in the evening or later or whatever, she would rather just get it done right now so she didn't have to think about it tomorrow, which kind of good, but at the same time, pump the brakes. You can worry about that tomorrow when you go in. But you're much better about that now.
Yeah. But I don't think I was a friendly person to be around towards the end there in 2024. People would come to me and say, sorry to bug you. Like everybody, that's the way to, and my job is to provide support. Sorry to bother you. And I'm like, I already answered this for you 12 times. And I just re-forward the email, but.
And so how is it now? And reminder, everyone, like you stopped working for a little while, which we'll come to the story of that and why you ended up going back. Mm-hmm. But it is a little better now.
Yes.
Okay.
Better now because when I got back, I did not put work email on my phone. I have a separate phone for work that I don't take with me everywhere. I pretty much shut down at 5, if not sooner, and I don't look. I don't check my phone on weekends, holidays, vacation like I used to. So that's really helpful. Also, there are certain things I used to do that I just haven't picked back up since I've gone back. Like things that I didn't like, I just stopped doing them and no one's noticed. All right. So so it is a little bit better. I don't think I'm miserable now, but I'm not, I feel like I'm just blah, like the way everybody feels about their job, maybe. Like I'm not inspired. I don't listen to the earnings calls and care. When the CEO does the all hands meeting, I'm not inspired about the plan for the future of the company. I don't know if people are, but I'm not motivated. Yeah.
Were you inspired in the past when you would go? Okay. Because I always wonder, very early in my career, I was going to those and I was like, this is such bullshit. Like, what are they even talking about? Is anyone believing any of this? Yeah, I'm puzzled. I mean, I was not a good employee, obviously. Like, what are you guys even talking about? Yeah. This is bananas. All right. So you were able to go on the trip. You both successfully either negotiated or just said, yeah, fuck you, I'm going on a trip. Yeah.
Well, I did not read that book. So that might have been, that was my flaw or my failure there.
It was a reasonable outcome. I think, you know, not even thinking about going back to work afterward is like probably pretty good. So, Bill, we'll start with you. So it's sounded like you and the owner of the company were, you had a verbal agreement that something would probably be worked out, but you went on your trip. And did you know for a fact that you were going back? Were you in touch? Like, tell us about going back to work.
I was not in touch, but we did have an agreement. We wrote something down in the 2 months when I was training my people. Mm-hmm. That I had a few people that were watching my territory. Like, they kind of divvied my accounts up to other people. And just made a plan. And it was written that I would be back in mid-October, whatever it was. So it would be the week after we got back from the trip. And I had no reason to believe they weren't. They had no reason to believe I wasn't. But I deleted my email from my phone and we went on the trip. And it was the first time that like I hadn't had to work on a trip. I mean, we travel a lot, but every single trip, be it Europe, Asia, or domestic, I would still be fielding stuff from my accounts because it was easier to do that than it was to get someone to fill in for a week or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was coming back. They were excited to have me back. They were semi-surprised to see me when I came back and I was semi-surprised to be there. So.
Gotcha. Was it hard to go back or were you like, it's actually, you have a lot of friends there maybe. I don't know.
It was easy, but also hard. Mentally getting back into it was difficult. Yeah. Seeing people, I know that was kind of fun. Cause then, how was the trip? You know, that for a while.
My opinion was that you were kind of excited and energized again of like, I'm going to be a go-getter. And
that is true. I guess I did.
Hard.
I did decide I wanted to kind of reconnect with what it used to be like. So my industry, the wine world prior to 2020 was actually quite fun. Everybody was out drinking. Good for business.
Yeah.
Maybe having fun. So it was somewhat of an easy job because, you know, fun to meet people and do it. So I enjoyed that. Since 2020, there's been so many different things that have happened with, you know, COVID, tariffs, wars, all these things affect the wine world, especially since a lot of our stuff comes from Europe. So I was excited to go back to what I used to do prior to 2020, doing more restaurants. That was what I started doing. So I came back with some enthusiasm to get back into the restaurant world. So that was kind of my focus. And through October, November, December, I made my plan to start the next year with getting into these restaurants, which I started to do and I got into it. But then just so many other things keep coming up. And I'm like, this is grueling. I mean, I've already done this like six times since, you know, I started this job. I was also in my job for 12 years at that place. So I've been doing it so many times that it's like, I have to start over again. And like, so that started kind of weighing in on me this year. So yeah, easy yet not easy.
Okay. So. And interesting. So what about you, Natalie? So you, Bill, you went back in October, November-ish after the trip. And then what was your plan, Natalie?
So, like I said earlier, when I asked for my sabbatical, my boss was supportive. So he couldn't technically hold my job, but he and I both knew that my role's pretty specialized too, that there's probably not a chance that it was going to be filled when I was gone. Like anybody from the companies listening, like he did not hold my job. I'm sure there's some like rule against that. But I sent him an email when I got back that I was basically back. And if it was still available, like, let's get the ball rolling. I only went back because he went back. I think had he not gone back, I probably wouldn't have. But I know there's some couples that don't retire together. And I don't, that wouldn't work for me. So I think it was like our plan to do it together.
Right.
So because I work for a large company, it took 2 months for me to get hired. So I didn't start until December. I had to do a drug test. I had to prove that I graduated, all the stuff. I'm like, can't you find these records from before? I worked there for 12 years. So I had to go through the whole thing all over again. During my 2 months off, you want to ask me what I did for fun?
Yeah. Well, what did you do? See, you have all like unlimited, unstructured time.
I just nothing.
She waited for me to come home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and then asked me, are you home for good now or are you going back out? I'm like,
I think because I knew I was going back to work, I was like, well, why bother focusing on other things that I could, like, I don't know, I'm just going to go back to the way it was before or whatever. So I just squandered the entire time. I didn't, I mean, I'm a runner, so I still ran every day. I probably had dinner ready for you when you got home, but half the time maybe, but yeah, it's so ridiculous to me now that I just I did absolutely nothing. Nothing. Like, I have no answer for this.
And like the other, I'll say disappointing, but don't take it offense, please. Like, you were burned out and you were like, oh, it'll just go back to the way it was. But you, like, you had the opportunity to, like, just be like, I'm not doing it like that again. So it's interesting that you were like, I'll wait for 2 months and then I'll also just go back to the thing that wasn't that great. And you, because of Phi, all the work that you guys put in, like, you had the opportunity to just be like, I'm absolutely not doing that. I'm going to whatever, work at the running store. I'm going to volunteer at a border collie rescue or some kind of thing like that. But you're coming around. So again, I'm not saying that.
Hopefully, like, where were you in October?
So hopefully not an aggressive way. Hopefully that didn't come across that way.
No.
But this is a good lesson. Again, a lot of people don't talk about, like, hey, I had a bunch of time off and, like, I didn't do it the right way. Yeah. And you see that now and you're correcting for that. So this is the third act here where we have the redemption. So you guys have picked up some hobbies, which you'll be able to, you know, expand on. And I think by doing that, like, you kind of got out of the work mode. So Bill, what's your plans for continuing to work or not work? Are you able to share anything currently? Do you have any plans?
Yes. My plan is end of October is my deadline to be done. I've been kind of, we've been talking about this recently, like, when I kind of need to make that known sometime soon, because I do like my company. I do like the accounts that I have. So I do want to set that up in a good place. Yeah. So I'm not just leaving them for failure.
Right.
Both the accounts and the business. I'm thinking, in order to make that go well, I got to do it kind of sooner. So I'm thinking sometime in July, I'm probably going to break that news again. Okay. I originally felt like after taking the trip and having them make a sabbatical plan and policy and letting me go on this and accepting me back, and everything was no difference, just thank you for the time off. And
yeah,
I felt somewhat obligated to be there for a while. We always had a plan. Like, I don't remember what the exact date was, but it was going to be, I think it was next year, into next spring, I think was our time frame. And then kind of moved that up a little bit. And now it's like even sooner. I don't know. But yeah, I felt that obligation, that kind of the guilt of, like, they did all this for me, so I at least got to give them a year. And now I'm also kind of like, there's a lot of good stuff happening in my company that I'm feeling almost guilty that I need to have someone else take this place, because I don't have the time and energy to do all these things right now anymore, or the desire more so than time and energy. I've got a lot of time. It's more the energy and effort or desire to do so.
Gotcha. That's cool. And timeline wise, this episode will air after you've talked to your company. So everything's good there, just in case there's any.
I was also operating under the assumption that if anybody was listening to this, they understand the ramifications and probably weren't going to go talk to them directly.
Yeah. Well, and the other way, you know, another positive thing is, like, someone's going to take over. And like you said, there's some opportunities, like, someone will be able to step up and do something more interesting that does have the, you know, motivation and they want to do it. And I think, like, that's one of the, like, sort of minor takeaways that I have from, like, the 5%. Like, if I had a job, I'd be taking a job from someone who actually would give a shit and do a better job, potentially. And I'm just taking up space. So, yeah, I think it's also interesting, like, it's a smaller company, so, you know, you don't want to put them in a bad position where if it was a big corporation, I'd be like, who cares?
Yeah, the big ones, they cut people off. In my industry, they just close the door and say, next week's your last day.
Yeah.
Or this morning was your last day. Yeah,
give the laptop more back. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, that's very cool. Congratulations. I think it's coming up fast. It'll be here before you know it.
It is coming up fast. So.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of excited about it, especially with this new thinking of trying to find someone to fit my spot to get that process rolling even sooner. So if it happens sooner, then hey.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
So one of my big things is why it's October is because I turn 50 in November. Yeah. And actually, while at Economy, were you in Kevin's breakout session on the last day?
I was not, but I heard about it.
Yeah. Okay, it was jam-packed room.
Yeah.
We were on the floor. But he said one sentence in that thing that said, I don't even think it was the point of what he was saying. It was just answering someone else's question. And just in his fashion, he just kind of threw out, so it's like, well, 52 is young for people to retire, but not for the people in this room. And it was just one of those sentences that just everything else went dark. And it was like echoing like in a movie. And I was like, oh.
Talking to you.
Yeah. So I was like, shit.
Yeah. Kevin Sebesta. Shout out to Kevin. Yeah.
So. Yes.
Anything else on your side, Bill?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. So I'm just looking for that more, you know,
yeah,
encouragement and prodding stick to make it happen.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Thought that was Georgie.
Yeah. All right, Natalie. So what about your side? So Bill has a plan. Last time you went back to work because he was working. So now he's not going to be working. So nothing holding you back.
Well, I want my two free months, you know, by myself.
He does kind of want those.
I kind of do.
Yeah. Well, if he's going in October, I feel like I should leave in October. The twist is there's a little bit of a financial benefit if I stay until January. It also kind of satisfies maybe my little bit of guilt for coming back and then quitting so soon, where I feel like January would be like a full year.
Plus, it's November, December, so we have a trip planned at the beginning of November, so it's holidays, so it's the easiest time to be there. So
yeah, nobody works like in the office during the holidays.
So, and I'm going to try to convince you if you want. So in some of the pre-interview stuff, you're like, oh yeah, like I want to hear some of this stuff. So if you want to, I do have some thoughts somewhere in here. Like, have you guys oversaved? Like, do you have?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your, you know, withdrawal rate and expenses are below
three.
Four. It's below three. Okay.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you can get the financial, it's a bonus, right?
Yeah.
So there's a bonus coming up if you stick around for another couple months. And will that money like change anything when you look at the whole portfolio and your plans for even 6 months, 6 years, 15 years? Will that amount change anything that you would do between any of those time frames, short term, long term, whatever?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And it's, as you told me off air, like it's a fairly significant amount. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I would have a hard time making that decision, but it's hard to argue for it when you could be doing literally anything else with your time instead of, even if I know there's not much work going on in the holidays, but you still get the emails, you're still going to get tickets and requests. So it's not nothing. What are your thoughts? Like, how can you argue for the money if it actually is not going to make a difference?
It's totally valid. And I keep telling myself that it's not one more year syndrome because of money, because I really don't think that it is. But then it's hard to make that argument when I'm staying for money. There is a little bit of guilt, though, too, of just, it took some effort to bring me back to work that I feel like to leave so soon.
All right. So I have something for that, too. So, and that's the bigger one, because you're like, some people did put, I mean, they tried to get you back on. So you had to re-interview and go through a long process. They denied your leave of absence request, which was valid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned that when they were doing the intake and they were hiring you, they were like, why didn't you just do the leave of absence, right? Yeah. HR told you that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously the exit folks and the intake folks are different people. Yeah. So I'm like, they also don't care about you. So sure, someone was like, oh yeah, let's bring her back on. But at the same time, like they're like, we're not going to give you the leave of absence. Like someone denied it. So I'm like, you're defending them, like that big corporation. So if it's a small company, a little different, but they won't even know you're, I'm sorry, they won't even know you're gone. They'll be like, oh yeah, they left again. I thought she already quit once, or didn't we just hire? So any thoughts on that? Like nothing direct, it's just like, they don't care about you at all.
Are you trying to make me cry, Doug?
No, I'm so sorry.
No, these are all very, very valid. That's why I'm just focusing, I think, on spending the rest of the year with life design in mind. And if extra money's coming in along the way until I get there, then that's my excuse, that's good. I guess. Yeah.
So she actually did shed some tears there. So sorry about that. But that's why we have the new HD 4K camera in here. So I think obviously it's still valid. And I gave like that advice, but like literally Elizabeth kept working exactly the fucking same thing for a much smaller amount of money. And I'm like, what are you doing? So like I could apply it and say, hey, this makes sense. And you're like, it makes sense, but there's another piece. And part of it is like downshifting to get ready to not work. So you quit before. And I think like for Elizabeth, like she needed to mentally prepare for a couple months or a little bit longer. But I mean, it worked for her and she would give that advice. She's like, oh, I needed this time, even though it was an okay amount of money, but certainly not enough where I'm like, this is worth your time to do something else. So I understand why you're doing it.
To that point, though, if something terrible were to happen between now and then, it is nice to know that I could just
peace out.
Yeah, not if there's a new project, if there's another acquisition that I hear about tomorrow, I'm done. Like, I'm not doing that again.
But yeah. And then when I'm also curious about this, how much notice will you give?
I think just 2 weeks, mostly because when I asked for the sabbatical, when I quit the first time, I gave 3 months notice with plans of training and transitioning stuff. And they didn't use any of it. They went to the very last day. And so I don't feel like the need to do that. Also, I didn't mention this, but when I came back in December, I had the same salary, the same desk. I had candy wrappers from before still in my drawer. And like the projects that I was working on had made no progress when I was gone. So it's like nothing, kind of like we're all replaceable. Nothing's that important. I don't know. I just feel like if they needed more time, I would feel like I'd give them more time. But I gave them 3 months last time and they didn't use it. So.
Right. I've heard that multiple times, by the way. Yeah, they need the urgency. And then they're not going to use any of your stuff. So, or it's like the last week when the replacement is there and they're like, oh my God, I have to do this next week. And then they have the urgency to ask the questions. Okay. Yeah. I love the 2 weeks. And it is, well, before you were like, I'm pretty important. I'm going to give plenty of notice. And then they like completely squander it. And then it ends up just being like more work for you for no reason. So, okay, great. And let's talk about what you learned at Economy, right? Did you both go to Economy?
Yes.
Okay. And how'd you hear about it and tell us about the experience?
I probably heard about it from ChooseFI or something. So that was, we actually bought those tickets the year earlier while we were in Japan. I feel like somehow I saw that I'm on the Facebook group or something.
Japan was a separate trip.
Yeah.
But that was actually our first Phi event. Like, I don't even think we'd been to any like Phi happy hours or like the local ones or anything like that. But we went, and at that point, so Economy was what, at the end of March? At this point, I'd already regret going back to work. It's only been a couple months. You know, I'm not really motivated, not inspired, don't really want to be there, feel like a failure. So I go to Economy, and you know how they had the friends speed dating thing? at every table I went to, when it was my turn to talk, I just unloaded all of my, like, I had this 2 months off and I didn't do this and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, my last table, I was like, what if my purpose is just to keep working? That's, I don't know. But no one at those tables felt sorry for me at all. And I think that was my, I thought there was going to be like, oh, how can I help you? And like, give you ideas. They were kind of like, well, what'd you do when you were retired, or, you know, we didn't have a job? I was like, nothing. And they're like,
of course.
Or like, well, what'd you expect? I don't know. I just think it was like the slap in the face that I needed of like, well, duh. Like, I've listened to all the podcasts. I read all the blogs. I knew this was going to be a problem, but yet I did nothing about it, like, in advance or during my time. And so I think just having that reaction from everybody, which was a positive experience. I thank everyone for your not giving a shit about me feeling like a failure. But that, and on top of going to all the speakers, and just a lot of it was about purpose and finding meaning and all this other stuff. And I just really, really took that away. And we have just been crazy busy exploding with stuff since we've been back.
Do you want to share some of your takeaways?
Yeah, Bob? Mine. Well, so I only get to listen to the podcast that she chooses for me. Mm-hmm. just how it works. So I'm not as, you know, informed of all the things out there. Still love it. Still 100% in it. Love everything she showed me. I'm all on board. I just don't listen to podcasts. And yeah. No offense. Yeah. So this was my first time actually just being immersed in people that have this same thing. So that was the holy shit. I just told these people that we took a sabbatical when it was nothing to them. Mm-hmm. It was like, yeah, no problem. It was cool. Like, yeah. It was like just telling them I got a cup of coffee this morning. It was like, yeah, nothing. Where everyone else I talk to in my life, it's like, oh, I'm thinking about retiring or taking this sabbatical. They're like, how are you going to do that? Well, I don't understand how this is going to happen. What are you going to do for, you know, all that stuff? And whereas there, it was just like, awesome, let's do it.
Yeah.
So that was my eye-opening experience when I first got there. And then I already mentioned Kevin's breakout, the one sentence that made it for me, really. That made us buy tickets for next year.
Okay,
so
cool.
We bought those, I think, that last day. So
I just saw it was sold out.
Yep.
Again. Yeah, I believe so.
Yep.
Yeah. Super cool. It's so fun. And did you talk about like the community and maybe people that you met at Economy? Because it's like there's so many people from so many different places. And then you have a lot of like open time. And then you have the speed friendshipping where you meet people, whatever, you meet like 20 people in the span of a couple hours or whatever. And then you're able to see them through the weekend and hang out at the hotel and you know, party after hours in the hotel lobby or whatever. So how'd that go?
I thought, well, great. That was quite fun.
Yeah. We didn't know that the after party is at the, what is it? The Fairfield?
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, we fucked that up, whatever day that was. But we did get alone time with Frank, which was very fun. Frank,
oh, cool. Yeah.
Vasquez. So that was a highlight. But it was, I don't know what I expected. I think I expected there to be, maybe it was just like the people we happened to talk to, but I expected it to be, some people were on their journey, some people were in the middle, almost everybody we spoke to seemed like they were already at the end, and that kind of was surprising to me. But it was also very helpful because those are the people that I kind of wanted to talk to, as far as like, I'm a mentee, like somebody teach me stuff.
Oh, okay.
So the one-on-ones were really good. Then I got a little bit more love and hand-holding and attention. But the random people at the table, like, didn't care at all.
In a good way.
Yeah, I don't know. It was great. It was just kind of what you said. Even though I know this community exists, I feel like having real conversations with people doing it too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without having to edit the sentence you're going to say to them. Like,
oh, right.
You know, like, oh, yeah. I don't really want to hear this. Yeah. What are you going to do for money?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen there.
And it's continued on going to the local FI happy hours we have in Denver too. Like, you're like, these are people. Like, I think I saw that guy at the grocery store the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And cool. So it's nice to know that there's this big community. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. And I think Diana published, she sent out a survey to the attendees, mm-hmm. and not everyone replies back, but I feel like maybe it was like a third of the folks are already retired or something. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting who you bump into. And funny thing, I met a couple people that have been the same number. I've been 5 years, mm-hmm. I think. They were there the whole time. Yeah. I never met them before, but for some reason our like schedules synced. And then I think they were on the same floor as me. But anyway, like I ended up like meeting people and hanging out. And it just happened to be like we had had breakfast at the same time and we were walking like to the event at the same time. Yeah. So I ended up talking to them a bunch more, but never met them in the past ever. Mm. Yeah. So, and you guys were at the other hotel,
yeah.
the right. Solare.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Fairfield, the lobby just happened. Like they let us just make noise and we tend to stay down there too late. So.
So we will be crashing that next time for sure.
Yeah. It's close by. Yeah. So, okay. And you guys are getting more into hobbies. You want to share some of the stuff that you're getting back into?
For sure. I feel it's like going through a midlife enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Not crisis. I'm like doing all these things that I used to do in my past that I've been putting off for ages. Like I have a drum set in the basement that's just been collecting dust for literally 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And decided that was on our goals for 2026 that we've kind of put down. That was on there. Playing tennis, which I haven't really played since the 90s, except a couple times here and there. So I've actually been taking lessons in that and doing that. So all these things that I used to do and have always wanted to do, but always been like, well, I'll do it after this, or I may finish this and then I'm going to get into that. I was in the middle of putting a window in our basement and I was like, you know what? Fuck this. So I started setting up the drums. So it was there. So then I was doing those things at once. And I went to the tennis courts and I looked up the schedule and I found some lessons and I got into those. So it was like,
that was 6 months ago and the window is still not put in.
We could hire someone to do it. Like you could spend your time doing your hobby and then you could pay somebody to do the window.
This is true.
That's why I have almost, to work till January.
It's almost done. Just a little trim. We're good.
Yeah. There's a window up, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not open.
No, it's installed. It just needs painted and trimmed.
That's done. That's like 80%.
Yeah. It's waterproof. What more do you need?
That's fine. Yeah. That's cool. So you rekindled hobbies where you're, okay.
Sure.
Very good. Yeah. What about you, Natalie?
So you left out golf. We've been taking golf lessons. Mm. Do you golf?
No.
I feel like since we started taking golf lessons, everyone we meet plays golf. And it is so much fun. It's just like a stick and a ball. Like it's just fun. Just smacking that thing. I don't know. Even if you're not playing a 9 holes or 18 holes or whatever, just hitting the ball, I feel like it's just fun.
So. I was actually surprised she liked it as much as we did.
Well, I'm better than him too. So
she is the annoying one that just hits it straight all the time. And you may not play golf, but I don't really either. We just started, but everybody says that's the hardest thing to do is hit it straight. And every single damn shot she hits is straight.
So golf is a big one. I started watercoloring, which I'm obsessed with watercoloring, and I'm like mad that I could have been doing this for the last 45 years had I just known about it. So I'm obsessed with that. Like I said, we're both runners and stuff, so that's kind of, we've maintained that. We've been going to the local events when we can. Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of them are during the 9 to 5.
Not that's quite there yet.
Now I'm in that place where my job is getting in the way of all the things that I want to do. Yeah. We've both been doing volunteering, but separate causes. Actually, I have to volunteer later today. I don't know. We're just like busy with everything. And I feel like I even have a list of things that I want to do that I feel like we just can't do now. I'm like, okay, next year I'm going to do this when we have more time. And next year I'm going to do this. But maybe I should just do your approach and just not finish the window, whatever my window is, and just start doing these things.
Yeah. Okay.
But we are just seriously, like every day is so exciting about we got something going on or something to do. And I don't know. We're super motivated.
Yeah. That's great. And I think, like you said, there's a lot of the Choose FI. It's a Choose FI group in Denver. Yeah, super active. And my friend Tyler, who also plays the drums, he has a group in Highlands Ranch area there. Yep. Have you guys gone to one of his?
Nope.
Okay. No. It's a few minutes away, right? It's like 20, 30 minutes or something. Okay. But yeah, there's so much stuff. And I think there's like during the week, during the day, which is obviously that's the best time to get together when everyone else is at work. And we found that we don't know how we worked or did anything else before because we have so many hobbies and other stuff to work on. And hopefully you guys will find the same thing. It sounds like it's right on the edge of that.
Yeah, I think we're in a good position and a good direction for sure.
Yeah.
So we opened with something that you wrote in here, and I won't reread the quote, but essentially, like, going back to work confirmed that you don't want to be working in the same way. And you also mentioned that I think early retirement was always a piece of the puzzle. It was like, some people were like, I just want to hit FI and then have options, but you wanted to stop working. So I don't have a clean question, but if you can expand on this and talk about, like, the confirmation that you don't want to keep working and you want to do other stuff. So Bill, why don't you kick it off?
Okay. Originally, like, say 5 years ago or whenever we first started talking about the FI and or FIRE, I, for whatever reason, because I pre-2020 actually really liked my job. Like I said, it was a lifestyle. It's fun. It's action. It keeps me engaged in the social city and all the people. I always assumed that once we hit FI or got our or FIRE or whatever, that I would probably stay on in some way because I could make it as easy as I wanted or as less time. None of my accounts are open to early, so I don't get up early. Mm-hmm. I just go whenever I want. So I always assumed I would kind of stay on, at least maybe in a part-time after the fact. But recently, I'm leaning more towards just going on to something else. I just, as fun as it used to be, and it's not that fun anymore, even if it was as much fun as it was back then, it's still kind of the same thing, and it's not all that stimulating anymore to me. It's like I need another challenge. So
yeah,
I could foresee for sure, like everybody always says, you retire and then you end up making money doing something else later. Mm-hmm. So I could see that happening in some capacity, but no definitive plans.
Yeah,
and nothing for at least 1 year.
Yeah. I think it's also okay to not earn money because everyone says, like, oh, you could earn money and like you'll accidentally start earning money, but you don't have to. And I think because so many people say it, there's now like a little artificial pressure to like earn a little money, even if you don't have to. Now, when you were answering, I thought of myself like everybody does, right? So when I was still running my online business, I was self-employed for 10 years. I was like, yeah, I'm going to keep working. Like, this is fine. I'm going to keep working. As soon as I didn't have to, I was like, fuck all of that. I'm not, like, I have zero motivation to do it now. And it was exactly my dream job that I created for myself. And I was like, I'm not super interested. So totally get it. Like, once there's no specific need, I mean, I can stay busy with other stuff. So I get it. Yeah. All right. So like I said, Natalie, this question is around confirmation that you don't want to keep working.
Yeah. So kind of likewise, in the beginning, I really liked my job. Yeah. I think on the surface, like, my job is pretty great and I used to really enjoy it. I have a lot of autonomy. Well, I do have to go in the office, like, which is the bummer. I'm the only person who does what I do. Like, my boss doesn't know what I do. Like, I get paid really well, I think, especially for the amount of work that I do. But it's gotten really easy and I'm bored. I don't know if we've talked about boredom yet, but I think maybe I was afraid I was going to be bored in retirement, which maybe I was, but I didn't really try that hard the first time. Mm-hmm. But I am so bored at work. I don't know if that ever gets talked about. Like, the job is just too easy now. It's not challenging anymore. I'm also not early in my career where I'm super ambitious and trying to like get the next promotion and prove something. So I just feel like it's just really boring. And I think about, you know, you only have one life and is there really nothing else I could come up with to do to spend with my time? And I have come up with a huge list of things to do and there's not enough time that I feel like going back has just like reminded me of why we went on this path in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you're not helping.
she does. I'll give you a little more fuel. She will, on occasion, a couple times a week or so, send me a text that just says, I don't think I'm going to make it.
Yeah, I do say that. Yeah. I'm like, man, can't do it. Send.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's like, I mean, I think boredom can be good, especially for like retirees where we have open time. It's like you don't want to accidentally like create a job for yourself because you're so bored and you're like end up, because I have heard of people, they're just like, oh, I'm going to start a nonprofit. And then they apply the same like effort and rigor and their type A personality to like make it successful. And they set smart goals and metrics. And then they create a job and they're like, what have I done to myself? So I think boredom can be okay, but yours feels like a waste of time mm-hmm. at work and you literally have to go in. So it's even worse.
Yeah. I'm trapped there for 8 hours that I can't. I think I was joking earlier that if I could just take my watercolors out, would anybody notice that I could just do that?
Well, in the pre-interview, I did tell you, I was like, rewatch Office Space, and just like yeah, whatever, clean fish, at your desk, bring the watercolor in. You're like, yeah. Or one thing I did, so I was a horrible employee from the very beginning. So when I co-opted, I was whatever, 20 years old. I worked at software company Nortel. I think I could say this now. This is just a made-up story, but it really happened. So I booked a conference room on like a different floor than what I worked on so we could all play board games, and then brought board games and I ordered pizza, and it was just like, yeah, like I have it for 3 hours, like we'll get some lunch in here. So I was like actively like keeping not just making myself not do work, but like keeping other people from doing work and just wasting fucking time.
Well, that's why I'm so glad you agreed to film this on a Saturday afternoon.
Right. Yeah, yeah, 100%. Well, I think if it wasn't Saturday, I was going to say like, go get your phone. We're going to do like the first on-air quitting. And call them up right now. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get it going.
That's funny.
Well, I'm glad you guys are going to try it again. And you learned from the mistakes from before. And hopefully other people can, you know, learn as well. So thanks a lot. Is there anywhere that you want people to follow you or not at all? Sometimes people share a like a Instagram profile or something like that.
No.
But off the radar. Cool.
No.
You may see them at Economy 2027.
Yes.
Or if you happen to go to a Choose FI Denver meetup, you might be there.
Yes.
Sometime.
So find me there. Find us there.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Super fun interview. Thanks a lot. And you guys did great.
Yeah. Thanks
for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast. And I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number 2, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number 3, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. You guys got your border collies when they were puppies. What were their names? Tell me about these dogs.
The older one was Xander. Younger one was Shiraz. They were 6 months apart.
They were not related.
They were not related.
But they were brothers.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So. And you don't have them anymore, so no. They died a few years ago?
They went to college.
Yeah,
we like to say. We were empty nesters. Yes, they... Xander passed right before COVID, and then Shiraz in 2021?
21, yeah.
Okay. Georgie is... under your table, right? Is she laying on your feet?
Yes.
Something
just
like that?
Just about, yeah.
Okay. So she likes you. You guys follow directions really well. It's one of those deals where, like, the more you don't pay attention to her, like, the more she likes you.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, so that's the other trick, which is kind of funny. But as you know, with border collies, like, so neurotic. And we had one before as well. So we had him from 2007 to 2017. And then we made it about 6 months before we got her. So what made you guys pick border collies?
I think that was from me. I knew some people that had a border collie puppies years and prior and just really liked it. It was a really fun dog. It was smart. It understood things. And yeah, it was fun and active.
So. And I grew up with Shelties. And so I was like, they're close enough. And they're 10 times better than Shelties.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that now.
Did you have any specific challenges just with the intelligence? Because, I mean, people underestimate how smart dogs are in general, but like border collies are super smart.
Almost everything they learned on their own. Like, do you ever have to spell to Elizabeth in front of Georgie?
Yeah, then she learned to spell the spelling. Fucking word. Yeah.
And then you got to change the W word to an S word.
Yeah. And then we start spelling stroll, and then, I don't know. So there's a little bit of that.
But I also thought that they were smart enough that if we're not going to do something for a while and they're anxious and want to go out, I think they actually understand. We're like, oh, go lay down. I'm going to finish this, and then we're going to go. And they're like, all right, I'll give you 20 minutes. You know, like, I think they actually were able to do that.
Gotcha.
And they were smart enough to know that they were going to get it. Just hold on. But
our probably biggest challenge was staplers.
Ah, stapler.
How so?
And three-hole paper punch.
Xander, he had some problem with staplers, like the sound of that. Oh, really? Whether it was a office stapler or like a nail gun.
One I'm using for putting up stuff, you know, like a construction
one. Or like a notary, like stamp sort of a thing. Any of that sound, he would just freak out. And sometimes, I remember like we would come home and you could just like hear something upstairs and you'd go up into the office and like the stapler would be like on the floor, like with bite marks in it. Like, I don't know. He had some weird thing with staplers.
He could be downstairs in a completely another room sleeping and you staple one thing and he's there.
Wow.
Just making sure.
Which
just,
you wouldn't think we stapled a lot of things, but we must have. Because that's funny. A big memory of staplers. We'd have to warn our dog watchers, like, don't staple anything. And sure enough, they'd have to staple something too.
That is, it's a perfect example of like how neurotic they can be. And I'm sure other dogs could do that. But yeah, that's so specific. It must have been the noise.
It must have been. But it was funny. I mean, he would, the entire time you were using it or even had it out on the table, he would just be staring at it, nudging it with his nose. And it was funny. Pick it up. And there's still chew marks on it. We still have the stapler.
Oh, man. And then how old did they
live? Just over 14 and 16 and a half on Shiraz.
Oh, those are pretty old for border collies. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, they're great dogs. And Elizabeth has talked about getting a different breed in the future. I think she does really like them, but like the neurotic nature and it's more challenging because they are so smart. So she's like, maybe a golden retriever or something like that. Like something that's just much nicer. Cause I was just like, don't try to pet Georgie. Like, just respect her. We say it's stripper rules. Like she could touch you, but you can't touch her.
Yeah. Whereas a golden retriever would be more like, try not to pet that dog.
They're like, oh, it's totally fine. And then did you guys, you don't have a dog right now, right?
No. Correct.
So you took some time off to be able to travel and do some things. So did you do any like pet sitting or other things to be around animals?
No.
Okay.
Maybe once, but nothing major. Okay. Actually, the girl that used to watch our dogs, we watched her dog a couple times.
Okay.
Which is also a border collie.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not really a dog person. I'm like a my dog person.
Yeah.
And I feel like I am specific to border collies. Like I don't really care about any other breed unless it's a border collie. So
except we speak border collie.
Yeah, we speak border collie. They recognize us. They can like tell we're good people.
Yeah. It totally makes sense. And I have a little bit more, a broader group of dogs that I like a little bit more than you, Natalie, but But yeah, there is something like to have gone, like had the dog that you spell stuff and then it eventually figures out how to spell. Yeah. And then I don't even know exactly, but there must be a series of things that we do preceding something like,
oh,
an obvious one is like going on a trip, mm-hmm. where you're like, you have a bag and you start packing stuff and you're doing weird things. And so like both of our border collies would start to recognize that we were about to do something before we realized that, yeah. we were doing anything to give them a sign, because we didn't spell anything. Yeah. We didn't say anything, yeah. about it. And then they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go grab my leash and stand by the door or something like that. So
yeah, they're intuitive. They figure it out.